Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Lori London reporting. Donald Trump has officially accepted the Republican Party nomination for President of the United States.
Friends, delegates, and fellow Americans, I humbly and gratefully accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States.
Declaring America in crisis, Trump pledged cheering Republicans and still skeptical voters Thursday night that as president, he'll restore the safety they fear they're losing, strictly curb immigration, and save the nation from Hillary Clinton's record of what he calls death, destruction, terrorism, and weakness.
Beginning on January 20th of 2017, safety will be restored.
Confidently addressing the finale of his party's less-than-smooth national convention, the billionaire businessman declared the nation's problems too staggering to be fixed within the confines of traditional politics. The 71-year-old celebrity businessman's acceptance of the nomination caps his improbable takeover of the GOP, a party that plunges into the general election united in opposition of Clinton but still divided over Trump. South Sudan's Ministry of Health says test results confirm at least 6 deaths from cholera outbreaks in 3 areas of the country. More than 30 suspected cases have been reported in the capital, Juba, alone. As of Wednesday, the nationwide total of cholera cases was 141, according to UNICEF. This is VOA. U.S. Republican presidential nominee Donald Trump is questioning whether the United States would automatically defend other NATO allies if they were attacked, a bedrock principle of the U.S.-European military alliance since the end of World War II. Trump telling the New York Times that if elected, he would first look to see if other countries have shared the cost of funding NATO. Secretary of State John Kerry was asked by reporters for his view on Trump's comments. Kerry says while he's not allowed to comment on presidential politics, he did say this.
I might point out every NATO country is a member of the coalition against Daesh, and 20 of the 28 nations were here today. So that's how important NATO is in the work that we are doing. And in coordination with our allies, we made it clear in Warsaw just a week or so ago at the summit, that we are going to continue to increase the capability, the readiness, and the responsiveness of NATO forces to address any threat and to deter further destabilizing activities.
Trump pledged to scrap the North American Free Trade Agreement with Canada and Mexico as well unless they negotiate new terms. The World Meteorological Organization reports the first 6 months of this year broke all previous global warming records. It says 2016 is on track to be the world's hottest year on record. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
David Carlson, director of the WMO's World Climate Research Program, tells VOA global warming is happening faster than predicted.
This year suggests that the planet can warm up faster than we expected on a much shorter time. We would have thought that it would take several years to see a jump like this.
Scientists are basing their assessment of the rapidly changing climate on record-setting global temperatures, which for the first 6 months of this year averaged 1.3 degrees Celsius warmer than pre-industrial era levels. Carlson warns the world is running out of time to cut the emissions of greenhouse gases leading to global warming. He says nations that have signed up to the Paris Climate Change Agreement last year must take more aggressive action. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Florida mosquito control officials are worried they won't be able to keep up their efforts to contain the bugs that carry Zika without federal funding, even as concern mounts that the first infection from a mosquito bite on the U.S. mainland is near. I'm Lori London in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 22nd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Republican Party presidential candidate Donald Trump has formally accepted his nomination.
Friends, delegates, and fellow Americans, I humbly and gratefully accept your nomination for the presidency of the United States.
We'll also talk live with viewers Vincent Mankori, who has been covering the Republican Party convention. Where is South Sudan's first Vice President Riek Machar? Zambia's opposition party said the choice of a Dubai-based ballot printing company could undermine the August 11 presidential vote. And at the AIDS conference in South Africa, activists pushed for rapid AIDS testing.
Following the event that took place at J1, which is the presidential palace, the following day, the government sent a helicopter gunship, which destroyed his house and also attacked our two sites in Juba. So that is why Dr. Riek Machar is not in Juba.
African youth with HIV say they need more support. Zimbabwe war veterans denounced President Robert Mugabe, and Gambia sentences 19 people this week for taking part in opposition protests. Those stories, plus our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The U.S. Republican Party concludes its national convention today, Friday. Last night, Donald Trump formally accepted his party's nomination for the 2016 presidential election. Among many domestic issues addressed, Mr. Trump reiterated his campaign promise that if elected, he will be the president of law and order.
Together, we will lead our party back to the White House, and we will lead our country back to safety, prosperity, and peace. We will be a country of generosity and warmth, but we will also be a country of law and order. Americans watching this address tonight have seen the recent images of violence in our streets and the chaos in our communities. Many have witnessed this violence personally. Some have even been its victims. I have a message for all of you. The crime and violence that today afflicts our nation will soon, and I mean very soon, come to an end. Beginning on January 20th, of 2017, safety will be restored.
Mr. Trump also criticized what he called bad instincts and bad judgment of former Secretary of State and presumptive Democratic Party nominee and Senator Hillary Clinton's foreign policy credentials.
In 2009, pre-Hillary, ISIS was not even on the map. Libya was stable. Egypt was peaceful. Iraq was seeing and really a big, big reduction in violence. Iran was being choked by sanctions. Syria was somewhat under control. After 4 years of Hillary Clinton, what do we have? ISIS has spread across the region and the entire world. Libya is in ruins, and our ambassador and his staff were left helpless to die at the hands of savage killers. Egypt was turned over to the radical Muslim Brotherhood, forcing the military to retake control. Iraq is in chaos. Iran is on the path to nuclear weapons. Syria is engulfed in a civil war, and a refugee crisis now threatens the West. After 15 years of wars in the Middle East, after trillions of dollars spent and thousands of lives lost, the situation is worse than it has ever been before. This is the legacy of Hillary Clinton: death, destruction, terrorism, and weakness.
That was Republican Party presidential candidate Donald Trump speaking last night after formally accepting his party's nomination. Joining us now from Cleveland, Ohio, is VOA's Vincent Mankori, who has been covering the Republican Party convention. Good morning again, Vincent.
Good morning, James.
So, thank you very much for joining us. So, how do you think that Mr. Trump's speech was received by the delegates?
Well, the delegates were fired up. They received the speech so well. You could see applause, standing ovations, people clapping and, singing USA, USA. It was well received, and I think he appealed to them in a way that, Donald Trump can appeal to his supporters.
No, I as I was listening to different commentary on the different television channels, the question of the vision of America and Mr. Trump's solutions kept coming up. What's your view from there?
Well, first we have to say, somebody listening to this speech who does not live in the United States will, of course, get a very, very gloomy and scary image of the United States. Donald Trump went to great lengths to portray this country as a dangerous place, a country that is in turmoil, a dangerous place where policemen are being executed, a country that is under siege. It is a really dark and gloomy image of this country that he gave. Then he provided what he says is his master plan to get this country out of this terrible, terrible position and condition in which it is in every area, whether it is security, health, immigration, and all through. He summed up the theme throughout the week of the convention, the different themes of making this country great by contrasting with what he projected as a really gloomy and dangerous country.
It seemed to me last night's speakers all painted a more loving and softer side of Mr. Trump compared to the rest of the convention when speaker after speaker bashed former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. I'm speaking particularly listening to Mr. Trump's daughter, Ivanka.
When Ivanka spoke last night, I think for the first time, somebody came on the platform who got personal and really humanized him. She went to great lengths to portray him as a great father, compassionate man, a man who values other human beings regardless of their color, their sex, or their positions in society. And of course, he touched on another softer part that, of course, will appeal to women. He said he really cares about women. He has appointed more female executives in his Trump organization than even men. He pays them equal wages. He's a man who believes in helping women have better childcare programs so they can enjoy working when they have families. So she did a good job in softening the edges of Mr. Trump to show him as a nice, compassionate, kind, considerate human being rather than the grump and rough man that many people consider him to be.
Vincent, before I let you go, I don't want to leave you without talking about Senator Ted Cruz and his failure to endorse Mr. Trump on Wednesday. And I following the news during the day on Thursday, it took on a new meaning.
What happened, it did take a new meaning. Many people are debating as to what impact this will have on Mr. Ted Cruz as he looks forward, of course, to running for presidency in the coming years. And some thought this could be a self-destructive kind of stand. But, the next morning, on Thursday, what Trump did, Ted did is he addressed this delegation from Texas and he said, first, I don't regret what I said. I will repeat it if I had to do it again. And he explained why he did it. He said, first, he had spoken to Mr. Trump and told him 3 days before that he was not coming to endorse him at the convention. And he was not given this as a precondition to endorse him. He went further and said, I will not support a person who has attacked my wife and a person who has attacked my father. So he was defiant and clearly, of course, came off as a person who is vindictive, who is bitter and forgiving. But the other point he was trying to make is that he, like many other prominent Republicans, he was not about to hand over the Republican Party to Mr. Trump, that he was preserving his conservative positions, and he had no apologies to make about that. Although he made it clear he's not going to vote for Hillary Clinton. But as to whether he'll vote for Mr. Trump, of course, that is everybody's guess.
Vincent, thank you very much again for a very nice coverage.
You're most welcome. Thank you.
That's VOA's Vincent McCourry, who has been covering the U.S. Republican Party convention in Cleveland, Ohio. As the global fight against AIDS intensifies, activists have placed increasing importance on getting people to know their HIV status. Many companies are developing new HIV testing methods designed to be quick, easy to use, and accurate. Tuso Kumalo looks at the latest methods presented at the International AIDS Conference in Durban, South Africa.
For decades, learning one's HIV status involved going to a clinic, taking a test, and then waiting for days or even weeks for the laboratory results to come back. Simpler, faster, and more private testing methods are being developed with promising signs of success. The advanced quality anti-HIV rapid test has already been approved for use by the World Health Organization and is being used by many people attending the AIDS conference. Dr. Tandika Khoza is the Southern Africa Region Senior Medical Officer for North Star Alliance, a non-governmental organization that has used this method in targeting truck drivers and sex workers in over 10 African countries.
It's very quick, and so you can pick up whether a person is HIV positive or not, and we can actually do a CD4 right there and then. So you just take the person's blood and you put it into the machine, and in 15 to 20 minutes, the person knows they're CD4.
CD4 count is a laboratory test that measures how healthy one's immune system is. Kits like the Western blot and Ebon are used to confirm the results, meaning patients no longer wait for days while their blood samples wait in the laboratory for confirmation. The new technologies also accommodate those who do not even want a doctor to know their status. The OraQuick in-home oral HIV test kit, still under trial, allows people to do the tests in the privacy of their homes. Lulu Ping from the UNC Project of China, an institute committed to the promotion of global health research, says a trial of the at-home testing in China was well received.
The advantages of self-testing are that it is confidential and more convenient than facility-based testing and allows a lot more privacy and convenience to the user.
Alere, a global diagnostic device and service provider, is in the process of getting its Alere HIV combo approved by the World Health Organization. If approved, the kit will be able to detect the HIV virus even during the window period and in infants that have just been born. The window period is the first 3 to 4 weeks after exposure to the HIV virus, a time during which most tests are not able to detect it in the blood samples. The advanced quality anti-HIV rapid test is only administered by professionals at a health facility, and Alere is hoping on approval. Alere HIV combo will also be administered by professionals. But those pushing for the approval of the OraQuick in-home oral HIV test kit are hoping to make it available in drugstores. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Durban.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, July 22nd, Daybreak Africa time, 19 minutes past the hour. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has called on his rival and former rebel leader Riek Machar to return to Juba so that together they will consolidate peace. The whereabouts of Mr. Machar, who is first vice president in the transitional government of national unity, have not been known since new fighting broke out earlier this month in Juba. The appeal also comes after President Kiir revealed that Mr. Machar was armed during the fighting that broke out on July 8. Manasseh Zindo is an appointed member of South Sudan Parliament representing the SPLM in opposition. He says Mr. Machar is not in Juba because of security reasons.
First of all, let me make some clarification. We no longer have the chief negotiator. Comrade Taban Dengai has resigned as the chief negotiator. So that position is vacant. On the issue of the chairman and the first vice president, he's outside Juba for security reasons. You know, following the event that took place at J1, which is the presidential palace, the following day, the government sent a helicopter gunship, which destroyed his house and also attacked our two sites in Juba. So that is why Dr. Riek Machar is not in Juba. He's outside Juba because his security is not guaranteed in Juba.
But other senior SPLM IO are in Juba, like Alfred Ladugore, who is the deputy of Riek Machar. He's in Juba. Tabandenga is there, and other ministers are there. If it's a question of security, why are your other ministers still in Juba and safe?
Some of the ministers who are still in Juba are there, and their security is not really guaranteed. Most of ministers have taken refuge at UNIMIS, and others have left Juba. The few who are in Juba, we cannot really say that, you know, their security is guaranteed. You know that our Secretary General, who is also the Minister for Energy and the Dams, Dr. Diomato, was badly beaten by the same regime in Juba. So we cannot say that the security of our ministers who are in Juba are guaranteed.
I've watched clips of Tabandengai and Ezekiel Lol meeting President Kiir, and Tabandengai came and made a statement that the implementation of the peace agreement will continue with or without Riek Machar. And there are talks that Taban is engaging the government seriously to implement the peace agreement. What does your party rules say on this kind of engagement?
It is very unfortunate that the two colleagues you've mentioned claim to be talking on behalf of the leadership of the SPLM-IO. We have the chairman of the SPLM-IO. We have the deputy chairperson. We have the secretary general. In the event of the absence of the chairman, he is supposed to delegate somebody who should talk on his behalf. The chairman has not delegated Tabandengai to speak on behalf of the movement. Tabandengai is a member of the political bureau, and he's never attended any political bureau since the formation of TIGON. So I can say that they are not talking on behalf of the SPLM-IO.
Manasseh Zindo is an appointed member of South Sudan's parliament representing the SPLM in opposition. He was speaking from Nairobi, Kenya, with Views John Tanza. Opposition parties in Zambia are raising questions about the choice of a Dubai-based printing company to supply the ballot for the country's August 11 general election and referendum. The opposition says the printing of ballots by a company outside the country is too expensive and could be used by the government to rig the elections. But Sylvia Bualia, deputy spokesperson for the Electoral Commission, tells reporter Peter Clarty the printing of the ballot papers is timely.
We have completed with the printing of everything in terms of referendum ballots, mayoral, local government, presidential and national assembly ballot papers. So what we are remaining with is parking, which is in progress. For local government, we only remained with one constituency in terms of parking. And then National Assembly parking is well underway.
Are you saying by the end of the week or perhaps next week, all the parking will be done and ready for the ballot papers to be transported to Lusaka?
Well, we are taking it that we should be able to be updating you in the course of this week on the freight arrangements, when exactly that we are going to fly the ballot papers out of Dubai to Lusaka, I guess by the end of this week.
So far that you have representative of the political parties and other stakeholders, mm-hmm. they're monitoring the process. What has mm-hmm. been their reaction about the printing process and the ongoing parking process at the moment?
The representatives of the political parties and other stakeholders are quite impressed with the work that has been done. And wherever they needed clarification, they were able to ask, and the commission was able to clarify some of the issues that they raised. And so I can conclusively say that they are very happy with the whole process and how it has gone. And also the commission is also very happy with the way we've collaborated with the stakeholders that are here.
Tell me about the finalization of the process to send these ballot papers to Lusaka in readiness for the election. What are the modalities that you're looking at?
Well, basically, these ballot papers are packed into pellets, and these pellets are packed according to constituencies. We're supposed to complete this to the end. Once this is done, the ballot papers have to go into some warehouse for cooling, and then it's the freight that we are supposed to be arranging right now. And the process for that has already begun. We are already arranging for that. And like I said, we should be able to give you the final information on what has been prepared in terms of which airline that these ballot papers will be on, what time that they will depart from here, and what time the ballot papers will be arriving in Lusaka, so that stakeholders will be informed to be at the airport to be able to witness the arrival of these ballot papers.
Sylvia Bualia is the deputy spokesperson for the Electoral Commission of Zambia. She spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from Dubai. Gambian authorities have sentenced 19 people to prison this week, with more than 25 still in detention and awaiting trial for taking part in opposition protests in April and May of this year. Among those sentenced to 3 years imprisonment are the leader of the opposition United Democratic Party, Useinu Dabo, as well as American citizen Fanta Dabo Jawara. Stephen Coburn, Deputy Regional Director for Amnesty International in West and Central Africa, tells Ricky Stryer why these arrests are a negative sign for the upcoming December elections in the Gambia.
And those protests come from 16th of April, when they had gathered in the suburbs of Banjul to protest against the arrest of other party members just a couple of days before, and also the death and detention of one of their leaders, Solo Sandeng, who'd been arrested 2 days before and beaten and died in custody.
How relevant is this as well as we approach the 22nd anniversary of the coup that in fact brought President Jammeh to power in the Gambia?
It's another example in the 22 years that President Jammeh has been in power of the kind of repression of political opponents, of journalists, of civil society. It has actually only got worse, more severe over the years. And we did a comparison ourselves of the human rights context before the 2011 election. The situation's got much more severe. We've had harsher laws, more arrests.
These are not just protesters per se, they are members of the opposition party. Will opposition leaders, will opposition parties be able to, in fact, run for elected office in December in the upcoming elections in Gambia?
It's going to be extremely difficult to have meaningful elections in Gambia if a large part of the leadership of the largest opposition party has been imprisoned and been imprisoned for simply protesting peacefully. Now, that's going to put a huge limit on the ability and the will of opposition parties to campaign, and also for the feeling of voters and others and journalists to be able to speak out and take part in what should be an open democratic process.
That was Stephen Coburn, Deputy Regional Director for Amnesty International for West and Central Africa. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. A pro-government Tuareg militia group is reported to have taken control of Mali's northern city of Kidal after fighting broke out between the militia and a coalition chiefly made of Tuareg rebels. That is it for this Friday, July 22nd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, along with our engineer Jimmy Cook, I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing everyone in Africa a very good weekend.
Next time on Street Talk Africa, Chaka Sali and his guests will discuss the Democratic National Convention and what a Hillary Clinton presidency could mean for Africa. Tune in to Straight Talk Africa next Wednesday at 18:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa. Next on Let's Talk, Men in Relationships. What should they do to keep them going and flourish? Join hosts Sande Shomari and his guests discussing Men in Relationships. This lighthearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC, right here on VOA Africa.